Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Because I'm not going to mess around with this suit thing anymore. Out. Done. You'll just have to tell me if somebody calls. All right. Okay. All right. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Here is our play-by-play call of the day.
The play, first and 10, balls at the 13. Snap, he loses the handle, Winston, but now completes it to Kamara at the 10. 5, touchdown, Alvin Kamara. Touchdown, Saints. They do it this time in the red zone, but what a job by Jameis Winston. 13 yards, he loses the snap, picks it up, and hits Alvin Kamara.
That was the Saints' only touchdown, so it's all we had. Saints won 13-10. All right. So, Mike Tomlin's not going to USC, and neither's Neil Coulong. Right, sir? Great to have you with us.
Carson is he's always fun. I was particularly entertained with the insight he provided the other day, which, to be fair, I don't know if that's him trying to break news. I think he was spreading the same Mike Tomlin as a candidate to USC nonsense that other people were, but he should probably read the room and know that situation is not something that is going to play well if he, proliferates the idea that that's something that's going to happen. I mean, there's just absolutely, it was silly. It was entertaining, and it's gotten even more fun now, so I should thank him.
I mean, because when it came time to answer it, I felt like there was a pinata in the room, and they gave him a bat.
knowing Mike Tomlin, I think he had that one in the holster. He was waiting for it. It's happened a couple times over the years. You might recall he gets linked randomly with colleges,
and you
know the college game far better than I do. Just from a media perspective, though, I'm aware that the high profile schools want to attach certain names with their head coaching openings for. Probably recruiting reasons, for notoriety, for alumni support. They want to show that they're casting the biggest net that's possible. And if anybody is aware of that kind of nonsense, it's going to be a coach like Mike Tomlin. And coaches that are coming under fire for perhaps not, having a quality track record of hiring minorities, Mike Tomlin's going to be the guy that they're going to throw out there. And the man doesn't want to be used as a prop. I don't blame him at all for that. I think it's absolutely nonsense to think that your job is anywhere close to the level of the job that Mike Tomlin has done and done well for the better part of two decades now. To suggest that he is not even interested, nothing to do with him being interested, to suggest that they think that there's a chance that they could lure Mike Tomlin away to take that job is arrogance at its absolute finest. And personally, I'm glad he said what he said, just because the effort that USC took kind of behind the scenes to prop him up the way that they did, it's embarrassing for him. I don't think a coach should have to deal with that. He shouldn't have to answer questions like that. He's being used for very specific reasons that have nothing to do with Mike Tomlin.
Right, exactly.
And Mike Tomlin shouldn't have to deal with that.
Right, and look, and you're telling me Carson Palmer's on the search committee?
For their sake, I hope that he's not.
No.
Okay.
No.
If he is, that's the guy you went right to right away. Huh? The one coach in the NFL that is probably the least likely to leave.
Right.
You went with Mike Tomlin. You couldn't have brought up anybody else along with Mike Tomlin, which makes it look transparent.
I think Tomlin and Belichick are two. Really?
Yeah.
Belichick,
yeah.
Huh?
Well, Belichick will never leave, but Tomlin will. You know, we'd be interested in Tomlin, just not Belichick. It opens up a can of worms and a bunch of questions that USC is going to – they're going to take a hit to their image, which already isn't all that great, by having to answer it now. Now all the people that suggested he was a candidate or heard from a guy who's associated with the athletic department who thinks that he's a candidate, all those people are going to have to answer for that. And they're not going to want to have to do that because I don't think a coach has ever in more emphatic terms shot down the idea that, you know, oddly enough, the coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers would leave months after he signed a 4-year contract extension to go coach at USC on the other side of the country where he has no roots. None of it makes
and
any
has
sense
to recruit and has to recruit.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Okay, that's why I always laugh when I hear about pro guys going to the college game. I sit back and go, you've gone from drafting to now recruiting, like trying to convince people to stay. Like, that doesn't happen in the – or convince people to come to your place, and then you got to convince them every year to stay. That's what you want to do?
Keep doing that over and over again. It's not coaching, as Mike Tomlin would say. It's not coaching ball. He would have – I think he would have major issues with the amount of time that he would get to work on the fundamentals of the game, which is not as – you're restricted at the college level, plain and simple. You get to do more of it at the pro level. The things that they're focusing on are just vastly different. It is a huge a game of recruiting. And Mike Tomlin being legitimately one of the most naturally charismatic people you'll ever meet, if he doesn't coach again, he's going to be in a broadcast booth, probably making the amount of money that he's making now. He'll be great at it. But if people don't know the guy, you don't know. He is 24/7, 365 a coach. That's really where he wants to be, and he's doing it at the top of his profession. He's been doing it for a very long time. He's not interested in resurrecting the program at USC. He's not interested in flying all over to talk to high school kids about coming to his school, and as you pointed out, getting them to stay longer than the 3 years that they're obligated to be there, dealing with the amount of regulation that is involved in that, both past and present, leading into the future. There's nothing there for him on what would have to be on the highest end at USC, the amount of money that he's making today.
Right. All right, so now after the bye week, now, okay, what are the common denominators to the, how about success we've seen going into the bye week?
I think the bye week, it's good to be able to kind of catch your breath and evaluate where you are. It gets you a chance to get ahead of injuries a little bit. Ones that are week to week tend to kind of fall into your favor after a bye week. You have a lot of I don't want to say inactivity, but you don't have to be at practice. You're going to heal a little bit quicker in that kind of environment. You can really rest. So I think the kind of week to week, day to day stuff gets cleared up. So you have a more refreshed team for that first week. Strategically, you get an opportunity to evaluate your entire team before diving into the opponent, which gives you perhaps a better perspective of who you are, as well as the time to prepare for your opponent to get to know who they are. Playing a team within your division after a bye week, I've always kind of seen as an advantage. I don't know what the numbers are off the top of my head, but they already know the Cleveland Browns. You know, maybe not as well under Kevin Stefanski, but they have a good sense of who the Browns are, considering how many times they've played them. 3 times last year. And, you know, obviously a little bit of a score to settle after that game last season. And it's a good Browns team. So they need all of that preparation. I would imagine they'd come out a little bit sharper, perhaps, than they have recently. But over the course of 4 games, and this is going to depend on who Cleveland is able to suit up and play. They're pretty decimated by injuries right now, but all things being equal on the two rosters, Cleveland has, you know, I think pretty clearly a superior roster. They have a good coaching staff, and they're able to do things that Pittsburgh is struggling with preventing right now. So I think Cleveland has an edge going into the game. The fact that Pittsburgh has a bit of a bye week helps, But then Cleveland just played on Thursday. So, you know, they've got a mini bye week leading into this game, and they're at home. So I think in many ways a tactical advantage goes away because of the familiarity of the opponent. And Cleveland had, you know, just only like two less days to prepare for Pittsburgh than Pittsburgh would have to prepare for another opponent that happened to play in on Sunday or Monday of week seven.
What did you think of the Johnson kid on Thursday night?
I think...
I thought it was a great story, by the way. I mean, he comes out of the Alliance and says, look, I just want a shot. They give him a shot because everybody's hurt, and he does that.
I saw the letter that he had written asking for, you know, whatever opportunity he can get anywhere else. He'd been in camp with the Saints, I think it was. He looked like an NFL running back. And to be honest, I don't like doing this. I hesitate on it because I don't want to trivialize the effort that he put forward.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But when you have a good offensive line, and even more importantly, a good scheme and well-coached guys, you're going to make guys be in position to make plays. Now, you know, whether he makes a guy miss and takes a four-yard gain and turns it into 11 the way that he did plenty often in that game, that's up to the ability of the player. But you can definitely make a fourth-string running back look pretty good if you have all those things going for it. You and I talked about this. I remember it back in the day. I'm racking my brain trying to remember who it was. But when the Browns hired Kevin Stefanski, what they did 15 minutes after, I'm sure, the ink dried on the contract with Stefanski, they hired an offensive line coach. And that is absolutely what Cleveland needed to do. I said this is going to be the watershed moment that we look back on when Cleveland is good. We're going to say it's because they made a commitment to their protection and within their offensive line to give them a foundation to build on. And not only is it the foundation, that's kind of the only thing they have going for them right now. They're not able to pass the ball particularly well, but they can run it. They can get chunk plays out of their running game, and there's not a whole lot of teams that can do that. So Cleveland has a chance with whoever they have at running back. And that's obviously a pretty significant advantage when you're putting out a journeyman behind, you know, a talent like Nick Chubb, behind a guy like Kareem Hunt. You have the ability to essentially improvise and continue to run your scheme, but with somebody who kind of needs to work his way into it. That's a big weapon. You know, you take a lot. They lost both their tackles. You know, they have other guys that can step up because of the scheme that they're playing in, and their ability as coaches to teach that scheme to the backup players who can step in and play at a pretty comparable level.
What'd you think of Case Keenum? Right, look, there are certain guys that I think are good, quote, backup quarterbacks that can hang in there for you for a game or two, and you can win with them for a game or two. Is Case Keenum one of those guys?
Case Keenum looked exactly like Case Keenum looks. You know, that's the thing that I appreciate about him. He was never at a high level, but he was at the level that he's at, and he's always at that level. He's consistent. Doesn't have a strong arm, but he puts the ball where it needs to go. He makes the right decision, and he controls the game well. I mean, at certain levels, not in the fantasy football NFL, at certain levels, though, that's a really valuable player. And I think that's what Keenum is, and that he's put together an outstanding career both before and after his miracle season in Minnesota.
Right.
He's done a great job of being a veteran, reliable quarterback. How many are there? You know, probably not all that many. I get the idea that everyone's going to, you know, jump on the easy bandwagon that, you know, may as well just play him over Mayfield. I mean, physically, there are some things that he simply can't do that Mayfield can.
Right.
And Mayfield needs to do a better job embracing those things and getting them to be positives on the field, which he hasn't done a ton of this season. He hasn't been terrible, but he's not great. We haven't seen him play at a high level, I don't think, often this season. But when you have a guy like that, it becomes a pretty easy decision. If Keenum has a torn labrum, which, to be honest with you, I knowing what I know of that injury, and I have some experience with it, even if it's his back shoulder, even if it or his front shoulder, I mean, he's not going to be able to play with that for very long. It will get hurt again. Keenum's going to play again. I'm surprised Mayfield has not had surgery, and I think a huge part of that is the team kind of saying, all right, well, we don't want to force him because probably he's coming up to us and saying, look, I'll go get surgery now if you guarantee me a contract next year or an extension next season, something like that. They're not sold on him long term. But if he was signed, I'd almost be willing to bet that they'd have him have surgery now. Keenum can keep that team competitive of where they need to be. Mayfield wasn't playing particularly well leading into it. Keenum is, to me, one of the most reliable backup quarterbacks in the league. He can step in, like you said, and play well for a game or two. I think he can go beyond that to a point where I think it's going to have to. Mayfield's not going to be able to play on
that's
that,
right.
For
right.
the rest of the season.
Right, that's exactly right. Did you watch Baltimore-Cincinnati, and if so, what'd you think of Burrow?
Oh, what a game that was! That was fun. I really enjoyed that as somebody that they're secondary teams in my mind. I know them well because I watch them a lot because of the obvious interest of my coverage area. Cincinnati is a really fun team to watch. They're putting a lot of things together. And Burrow, while I thought Burrow had a great game, Burrow's performance paled in comparison quite a bit to. The rookie Jamar Chase, who's offensive rookie of the year as far as I'm concerned, and their defense played lights out in the second half. They get after the passer like nobody's business. Lamar Jackson had nowhere to go with the ball. He was lucky really that he got what he got in that game. Made a great throw to Marquise Brown into the end zone, but beyond that, Jackson was a non-factor. They shut him down pretty effectively. And you do those things and then have a quarterback who can complete 70% of his passes for 400 yards and a game-breaking wide receiver, you're not an easy team to beat. And I think Cincinnati is starting to figure that out. At the same time, I don't know if you guys happened to watch it, but you know what I noticed at the end of that game more than anything? I've never seen a Baltimore Ravens team quit on the field with 7 minutes to go. But they gave up. They were not invested in the remainder of that game at all. You don't see them give up a 46-yard rushing touchdown followed by a 21-yard rushing touchdown. They gave up 100 yards on two drives on the ground. That's not Baltimore at all. It was really I'd imagine John Harbaugh was a little discouraged overall with his team's defense. And to some degree, at lots of times, for the season for them, their defense has been pretty light. I didn't expect to see that from them, but they're both really good teams. I don't think Cincinnati is 30 points better than them, but
no.
They're both going to be competitive. I expected Cleveland probably to look more like what Cincinnati has, but if Cleveland puts it together too, you've got the best division in football, and Pittsburgh's at the bottom staring up at that with the bulk of their division schedule to go here in the second half of the season.
What do you think a week like this meant to T.J. Watt?
I would hope he spent a good amount of it in an ice bath.
Yep.
Getting rub downs, ice bath, maybe some light agility work. But he needed to rest up in a big way. The explosion that we saw from Watt in week one has not been apparent. I don't think I got shredded for this in social media. I did not think T.J. Watt played end-to-end a great game against Seattle. He obviously dialed it up in overtime. We saw him make two huge plays on back-to-back drives. I don't think he played a great game overall. Watt is the type, though, that has a way of making a play at some point in every game that he plays, and that's what you remember. That's why he's making the money that he's making. But I think it's still bothering him. I don't think he has that burst that makes Watt who he is. Some rest is definitely going to help that. It's pretty easy for that injury to come back, too, so who knows if he's going to be as explosive as we'd hope that he would be throughout the season. But if he is, it couldn't come at a better time. You're playing a game. I think a lot of them are going to be must wins for the Steelers down the stretch, and they're not going to win a whole lot of them. But they're going to need division wins here if they want to stay competitive within the AFC. And Watt's going to have to be a big part of that against a team that, regardless of who's carrying the ball, is going to need to step up against the run. He's a great run defender.
Well, we're glad you weren't West Coast tempted, because I mean, if Tomlin went, you would have gone with him. So
I'd follow him anywhere. Easily the best quote that you get from any coach in the NFL.
And you're the best quote
year
we get.
In, year
you're
out,
the best quote
weekend.
We get in this show, sir. Thank you so much.
I learned from the best. That's why.
That's
thanks,
right.
guys.
Come back with more in a moment. Suit is now sending me suggestions. It's my only suggestion is, my only suggestion is what? Fix it. Wait, do you run into this all the time?
Again, it depends on the day.
I mean, this is sad. This is sad. Oh, boy. You know, if you work with Doug Bergson, like, Doug is a doer. I think you need to do this. Not Doug. I'll do it for you. Now, that's the kind of guy you want to work with, isn't it?
You, sir, are my hero!
Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Great to have you with us on the show today.
It's amazing this has turned into an epic. I know you're shocked.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Done. So, you know, it's interesting when you deal with young people. I know the fans are totally distracted by the Franklin deal. I got it. It's interesting when you're around the players. You don't get that feeling. And again, it's amazing. 18 to 22-year-olds are a little different gear than the rest of us, I think.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
He left a step out. Oh, the suit.
Oh, that's so what happened. Okay.
So close to complete brilliance. Right? Well, no, I figured it out myself.
All right, well, there you go. Even better.
I don't have that kind of time. I'm trying to do it during the show. Come on. Ace.
Well, the bottom line is it's fixed.
Of course it's fixed. It's, you know, it's made in the old Soviet Union. I hit it on the side. It only understands force.
See, that's what I always say, but then the suit always usually doesn't respond to that.
Well, no, see, I intimidate him. You don't. Humana, humana, humana.
Yeah, that's true.
I did. All right. So, yeah, I know. Now he sends me something else. I already did that. I got it fixed. Okay, I don't need your help. Okay. He sends me a new thing. There'll be a bubble red button that says, I already did it. I did it without you.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
Is he in the building?
I think so. We still here.
Just walk to the back. I'll take a moment, okay? Just take a moment, leave the room, go in there and tell him he already fixed it on his own. He didn't need your help. See, if I have a problem and I ever go to Mertzi, boom, all set. Total gem.
Of course.
This, it's like dealing with the Phillies bullpen.
You know what's the, in some cases, he would agree with that.
So I'll send you a picture. I don't need a picture. I already fixed it. I fixed it 10 minutes ago. Okay? I figured it out myself. I got a picture. Woohoo! Yeah, no kidding. That's what I did. All right. James made one other interesting revelation today, and the only reason I haven't talked about it is that he hasn't talked about it. That was about Sal Wormley. Sal had won one of the guard jobs in the preseason. That's been a loss for them because I thought he was having, Jack and I both thought this, that he was having a really good season. And he was in a position to start, as James said, this year. And that was a big loss. I mean, just like Adisa Isaac in the end rotation is a loss. Like, you're going to get injuries. There's no doubt about it. You can't get through any season unscathed. You can't be done. You get amazed when you get through a season and you have relatively few injuries. It's amazing when that happens. I'll tell you, like Ohio State last week. Ohio State for Indiana had 14 players out. Now, the vast majority were either walk-ons or freshmen that aren't playing. Okay, but there was like Tyler Friday. He would have been in the defensive line rotation. Really good player. Master Teague would have been in the running back rotation. Obviously, Master Teague's a really good player. I'm trying to remember the 14. Of the 14 guys, I would say there are four guys that are big participants for him. You know what was interesting, though? Is a guy that didn't play, and I wonder if they're redshirting him. I don't know why you have to redshirt anybody because last year was a free year. But for example, Julian Fleming did not play against Indiana, and he's not on the injury list. So I don't know what his status is. I don't know. To be honest with you. Because I went back, I said, you know, I better look at the injury list to see, and he wasn't on there. But they've got, you know, so in other words, Ohio State, which has had, obviously a really good season to this point, okay? It's not like they don't have injuries. They do. Harry Miller, for example. Harry Miller, good player that would have been either a guard or a center for them. He's been out. So they've had to go without him. So you go through, and everybody does get injuries. Yeah. You know, so for Penn State, they lose a guy that is going to be a starter at one of the guard spots in Wormley. Adisa Isaac was a big loss because it's not a question of just him being a starter, but even if he's not starting, you know, you'd have a nice, solid four-man rotation at that defensive end spot. And so you lost the luxury of that. And again, everybody goes through this. Everybody goes through this. This is not... a woe is me about Penn State. But I'm just saying that, you know, when you do look at from the Penn State point of view, okay, they lost this guy, they lost this guy. It's like, yeah. And of course, Mustafer is very hard to replace. He's very hard to replace up front. And especially in a game like that, where going into the game, I was on the Illinois network, and they asked about Penn State's ability to stop the run. This is before the game. So I'm on with Steve Kelly and Lauren Tate on their network. And I said, you know, we're going to find out. I said, because this is the first time they've gone out there and they don't have the linchpin that would be your number one guy against the run out there in Mustafer. And it's not just a question of Mustafer's ability to stop the run himself, but he really demands a double team. And what does that do? It sets up a linebacker. When they're double-teaming one of your tackles, which P.J. deserves a double-team, it now sets up Smith or it sets up Brooks because a lineman is occupied, an extra lineman is occupied with PJ. So I said, going into the game, I said, I don't know how they're going to react in the running game because he is the domino by which everything then falls into place in the running game for Penn State. And I said, I don't know. Now, here's one for you. And this will be one, obviously, that we'll let Matt chime in because this is a really good Matt's great at whining. What do you think of the overtime model starting in the third overtime?
I am with Revson. I am not a fan at all. Not football. Keep it the way it is.
Yeah. I know what the goal is. Right? So I get what the goal is. And a lot of things in football have changed. I mean, how you practice has changed. The number of days you're allowed to hit has changed. The NFL's really changed. And, of course, they're doing all of this because of all the outside pressure about football and all the outside pressure dealing with concussions. I get it. And we want to keep the game going. So with that, you're trying to think about a player safety rule. There's no doubt that this is a player safety rule. And remember that Texas A&M LSU game a few years ago? What did it go, 7 overtimes?
It did, yeah, and it was a ridiculous score, and yeah, exactly right.
And you know how many plays they ran? It's 260 plays. Okay? Well, you get into a game like that with 260 plays, you know, and that's the regulation plus the overtimes. 260 plays ramps up the possibility of injuries. So obviously in the last 7 overtimes, a total of 14 plays were run, 7 by each team. So that's what they're trying to do. So in the first 2 overtimes combined, Penn State and Illinois ran 23 plays, okay? And you ended up with 4 field goals. They ran a total of 14 plays in the last 7 overtimes. The average overtime in 2020 averaged a little bit better than 14 plays. Okay? So, the NCAA is saying that, you know, the head of all this, his name is Steve Shaw, and he's the national coordinator of officials in the NCAA. He actually was happy with how it turned out because only 14 plays were run, which means the wear and tear in the players' bodies was that ended up being the equivalent of triple overtime and not like 7 overtimes like that 2018 game between Texas A&M and LSU down at College Station. I mean, I don't like it. It's not football. But I understand the reason behind it.
The other thing, too, I found, Steve, I find it to be a little deceiving because when I think of a game that went 9 overtimes, I'm thinking, wow, that must have been like a really long game. And, yeah, it puts a lot of stress on bodies and stuff. But really, it's like an overtime after the third one is like 2 plays. It may even be just
right,
be
exactly.
One, you know. So it's kind of deceiving because the game really wasn't that long, even though by regulation purposes it was. I just don't like the vibe it gives. And I don't want to go as far to say as it kind of made a mockery of it, but it did get a little ridiculous that, man, just nobody could score, and then the overtimes just kept piling up. So it's...
Yeah. I mean, it's like... I'm not crazy about it. I mean, even if Penn State won, I'd be sitting here saying, ah, geez, I'm not really crazy about it. But, I mean, I'll tell you, well, here's the insanity of it. You run 2 plays, and after 2 plays, you're still tied. Okay. So, of course, now you want to change ends. Well, Penn State always wants to play at the student end. Illinois always wants to play at the north end. All right, so you got to walk all the way down the field. You know? All right, let's change ends. 2 plays. Right, now let's walk back to the other end of the field. You're like, Jack and I are looking at each other like, you got to be kidding me. Just line up and play. Let's.
I mean, yeah, there you go. There's the other side of it, too. And then the other point of this, Steve, is to me, is if you want to truly eliminate plays and protect them, you do what the NFL does. You play a 10-minute quarter, and you call it a tie after that. Now, I don't want to see that. I hate that there's ties in the NFL, and I think ties in college football would continue to really make things even more critical than we see when it comes to college football. It just makes things more complicated. But that's all it has to be. So it's either you do it that way or you just keep it the way it is and play the game properly. And if it goes long, then teams will just learn to deal with it and move on to the next game.
Well, you know what? It's... again, I understand the reason behind it. So you're trying to reduce the number of plays on players. Totally get it. I think I did say at one point when they were going down to the north end, I think I said, look, just knock it in the end zone. Let's get it over with. And let's get out. I think I said, knock it into Penn State was going to have the ball. I said, look, knock it into the end zone and let's get out of here. I'm not crazy about how the NFL does it either with a 10-minute whatever, but I don't know.
Now, as far as the NFL thing goes, I've always said you can keep the 10 minutes if you want to try and eliminate, but then just keep playing until somebody wins.
Right. Yeah. You've gone through it, seen it. I understand that's the rule. You live with it, and you move on. And, you know, you'd prefer to see the thing end in the first or second overtime as opposed to that. I mean, we were ready for it. I mean, I explained it right out of the gate what the deal was. It was different. I know that. And it has nothing to do with winning or losing in the game. But it was different to see because obviously I'd never announced a game with that format before. I did a triple overtime Orange Bowl. I did a 4-overtime Michigan game. Now I've done this. Overtime, I'll say this, brings with it the stress of it's unreal. The stress of it's unreal. I haven't felt that kind of stress since I was listening to a Shikalimi game.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
Mertzi, stay on the road. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Mike, at any point in your coaching career, did you ever have an interest or express an interest in being a head coach in the college game? And do you have any idea how that may or may not have led to folks like Ryan and Doug Whaley and Carson Palmer connecting you to some college jobs?
Hey, guys, I don't have time for that speculation. I mean, that's a joke to me. I got one of the best jobs in all of professional sport. Why would I have any interest in coaching college football? That'll be the last time that I address it. And not only today, but moving forward. Never say never, but never. Okay? Anybody else got any questions about any college jobs? There's not a booster with a big enough blank check.
Anyone else? All right.
Thank you. Anybody asking Sean Payton about that? You know, anybody asking Andy Reid about stuff like that?
Smokescreen, obviously a candidate. No?
Mike Tomlin angry. Mike Tomlin smash.
Yeah. Wow. I think he was pretty loud and clear about it. Again, Carson Palmer, no offense. I know he's a USC Heisman Trophy winner. I got it. But...
Yeah, if they care about his opinion for their next coach, then that place is more of a mess than what it is right now.
It's like, you gotta be kidding me. I don't know. I'm not gonna speculate on what USC is going to do or why they should do it. But, you know, something I thought, and this is where I was totally wrong, I thought after the pandemic, and of course, you know, we're still technically in it, right? But I thought because of the pandemic and all the money that was lost last year, you know, everybody lost eight figures per in Power Five, that there might not be, quote, a lot of movement with coaches. Because movement with coaches means what? Buyouts. Movement with coaches means a new contract with somebody else. Movement with coaches means you're paying two coaches at the same time. And I thought that that would slow down movement among coaches. And then last year, during the middle of the pandemic, in the summer of last year, Danny Manning got fired at Wake Forest. I'm like, I guess I was wrong about this. And then Clay Helton early on this season, now Ed Orgeron. Wells down at Texas Tech. He was only in his third year there. He's five. I mean, he's over 500. He's 5-3 right now. They got rid of him. He's not their kind of guy. I thought the pandemic would cause less movement, not more. Because you're already hurting monetarily. Do you want to be buying out somebody's contract and then also paying somebody else new to come in, and now you've got double salary? Evidently, they do. I was wrong about that. I thought it would slow everything down. Instead, it's been the opposite. I don't know. You see my logic as to why, but it does it logic and this situation, they don't match up. Now, Mike Bone at USC did not hire Clay Helton. Let's see. I don't think I think Joe Aleva is the one that hired Ed Orgeron. But again, anybody whose biography at one point says, after being heard on FBI wiretaps, somebody explain to me why Will Wade at LSU is still coaching basketball. He's probably happy I'm doing the Michigan State game that weekend, because he probably would not want to see me when Penn State plays LSU. FBI wiretap heard saying, still coaching.